is not measured up to your idea of being religious, you might be a Pharisee. But let me speak to this one. If you believe God never compromises his love, you might be a Pharisee. If blind obedience appeals to you, you might be a Pharisee. If you're standing in judgment of others, it's fine. If Sunday is a bad word, then I'm too bad. If you think the only commandment is the fourth commandment, you might be a Pharisee. If a good working definition of the gospel of Jesus Christ is not offending other than a clean and unclean meat, you might be a Pharisee. The big three. If words like new moon, conjunction, equinox, round disc, calendar are a regular part of your vocabulary, you might be a Pharisee. If a fly lands in holy water, is the fly sanctified or is the water polluted? If this is an intriguing question, you might be a Pharisee. If you gave this to an outsider. So, guys are being killed, American soldiers are being killed, and Iraqi people are being killed over there in the war. You have kid pornography, you have child molestation, you look at all the things that are going on in the world, and you think, what is trouble? Well, I heard a little story just recently about the show America's Most Wanted. Many of you know, and I don't know the name of that guy. His inspiration for that, his flash point for that show was he had a 6-year-old boy that got snatched away in a Sears. They found him a few months later. He's got his head. Just look at his head. No body. And so you're looking at this world in which we live from that position of all the evil, the filth, the rot of the world. That's what's going on. And then you look at the church from that third position. And you see someone maybe trying to figure out exactly when the sunset. And, is the bride sanctified or is the one believe? You see that and you think, what's going on here? How important? How relevant are these issues? And maybe more important could it be that there is a pharisaical spirit in the church? What can you do about it? What can you do about it? What did Jesus say about Pharisaism? Let's turn there and look at that. In Matthew 23. Verses 1 through 4, it says, Then spoke Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to do, observe. Not observe and do, but do not do according to their works. What they say and do not do, what does that tell you? Pharisees. They say that they do not do. Well, that's what you call a hypocrite. I mean, that's the person that says the one thing, but doesn't stick to it and do it. When they find any burden hard to bear and weight of our on men's shoulders, that they themselves would not move one of them with their fingers. Powerful statement about what Christ said the Pharisee is. Now, I also notice that it says that they say and do not do. I want to come back to this, but keep your place here. We're not going anywhere. Don't mean we're sorry, we ain't going nowhere. Just give you a place right there. We'll come back to it here. I'm going to explain, digress a little bit, and come back to this and explain something. That'll tie you. Are you able to live with your convictions? The Pharisee was not able to live with his convictions. There's a reason why. The answer why wasn't he able to live with his convictions? There's a reason why. We'll come to that in just a moment. But are you able to live with your convictions? Let me explain a little bit. Are you able to live with your convictions? Let's say you believe it's wrong to wear the color orange at church.
Celebrate Christmas and Easter without having to tell someone
Thank you. cheating on that, I can make up a fair will. If I'm struggling with the Ten Commandments, I will overpass, overreach God, overachieve in another area to make up for that bad. I may have all the Sabbath, I may have all the holy days, I may have whatever it is, but that's compensation. And that's something that it just naturally happens within mankind instead of dealing with the root of the problem. And that is, I think, the struggle in this area of compensation. Now, let's get back to this book. Because I want you to think that we never tell others about our conviction. I'm just trying to prove that point that until you own your convictions, you're not ready to go out and talk to anybody. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time until you own those convictions. Why do we tell others about our convictions? Let me get a bit of a sweat. Until you own your convictions, it's a waste of time. You can't give away that which you don't have. Does that make sense? You can't give something away you don't even have it yourself. And that's what I mean by owning your convictions. Why don't we tell others about our convictions? Well, some people do that out of obligation and duty. Some people are told you will go out and knock on the doors for 4 days a week and share your conviction with people. I'm not knocking, but that's a good thing. I wish I could do it. I wish I was the type of person that could do that. But I didn't tell anybody. One of the ministers said it was funny. He said there's a guy who would drive himself. I mean, my brother. He said, excuse me. And you probably don't want this, do you? I didn't think so. I'm telling you all that. That's my style, so I'm like that. And it's personal things. I don't know what it is, but it's something there. Obligation and a duty. If you're not committed, you say, well, look. This problem does not exist. You never have it. It never dies out. Sure.